Educators want to stay fresh with literacy instruction, but are so busy with students, they don't always have the time. All year long, Choice Literacy publishes and delivers the best K-12 literacy practices so that educators can grow their students as readers and writers with choice in literacy. Welcome to the Big Fresh Choice Literacy Podcast. I'm Ruth Ayers. This week's lead essay is called Learn to Care. Children must learn to care, the presenter said, and I cut my eyes to Andy, my husband. We were sitting in a mandatory training session to complete our foster care license. I lifted my eyebrows and Andy shrugged, silently communicating for me to accept the statement rather than stopping the presentation with a question. At the time, I was in the early years of my career. I was enamored with child and adolescent development, as well as brain research. The idea of learning to care, though, was new to me. Must humans learn to care? Don't we innately feel a sense of caring and compassion for one another? Don't we seek connection through understanding? It's been many years since the idea of learning to care first pricked my mind. I no longer question the statement or push against the sentiment. Yes, humans must learn to care. There's a phrase I've used so often when talking with my own kids that they roll their eyes and mimic the end of it once the first words leave my mouth. I say it when they are upset about the way someone has treated them. "You know," I begin. Sam will roll his 15-year-old eyes, or Jordan will say in his deep 16-year-old voice, "Don't remind us." I let the next words roll off my tongue. "People who need the most love." "Show it in the most unloving of ways," they will finish the statement. They are learning to care. For many families, learning to care is an ingrained part of their family life. It's part of our school cultures, too. We help children build empathy for others. It is not easy work, which is why I am excited to share this week's content with you. We offer many practical ways to build informed empathy in reading workshop. Naval Karuni Cassiano offers 3 gorgeously varied picture books and guiding questions designed to cultivate an inquisitive stance and informed empathy in students. After reading this article, you'll be able to immediately put these ideas to work in your classroom. Take a moment to listen to your classroom library. Leanne Eck personifies her classroom library by sharing the lessons it whispers when she takes the time to listen. This is a practical guide to keeping your classroom library timely and relevant. Mark Levine explores ways to cultivate empathy by sharing texts with multiple perspectives on the same event in his middle school social studies classes. I love the way this combination of articles empowers us to consider building informed empathy in a multitude of ways. The theme of building empathy continues with our Literacy Leader articles. Tara Barnett and Kate Mills' new article is the perfect companion to this week's theme. It's all about soft starts to professional learning meetings that are designed to build empathy by providing opportunities for teachers to do the work of readers and writers. Matt Renwick writes a compelling article for trusting teachers and encouraging growth through coaching conversations. Matt also recommends the website Thinking Collaborative for ideas for coaching skills to maximize capacity in individuals and organizations. This week we are highlighting 2 courses. Our elementary contributor course focuses on empowering more choice in literacy for students. Matt Renwick's new course about literacy walks is a treat for administrators and teacher leaders, as Matt shares ways to seek, name, and strengthen promising practices in literacy instruction. We have completely redesigned our courses. They are free to members, and you get instant access, as well as a way to track your progress and a certificate of completion at the end. Our courses are a great way to find lots of content around a high-interest topic. Don't miss out on March Book Madness, hosted by Tony Kiefer and Scott Jones. It's not too late to join in, and there's also a must-read article by Stephanie Affinito about how she is inspired by March Book Madness to lead engaging professional development sessions. Karen Terlecki's article shares how she set up book clubs in her fifth grade classroom to focus on empathy. There are links to everything in the show notes. Matt Renwick joins us this week to talk about his mantra, Read by Example, as well as his new course, Literacy Walks. Matt is this month's featured contributor and a principal in Wisconsin. If you don't already follow him on Twitter, his handle is @readbyexample, then it's the next best thing you can do for yourself as a professional. Matt Renwick is joining us today on the podcast. Matt's been a longtime contributor to Choice Literacy. He's an elementary principal and an author of the newsletter, Reading by Example, as well as books for literacy leaders. Matt, I'm wondering how you started writing for Choice Literacy.
I started when I met Claire Landrigan and Tammy Mulligan through Twitter. And we had connected online and decided to present at NCTE, National Council of Teachers of English Conference on Action Research. And I had blogged at readingbyexample.com. And I was getting, I think, a little bored. I don't know what how else to describe it, but I just wanted something new with the writing. It was feeling stale. And they had said, hey, you should write for Choice Literacy. I'll talk to Brenda Powers about it. And that's how that started. Brenda reached out in 2015. I started writing in 2016. And that just felt like it validated, some of the writing to work with someone like Brenda and you and Claire and Tammy and everyone at Choice Literacy just validated that, yes, what I have to share as a principal in an elementary school is worth sharing and worth writing about.
Well, it is the content that you create is so on point, and it's clear that it's part of your everyday life. And then you're able to reflect and share it out in ways that people can make some of those moves too. What else should we know about you?
Well, I'm an elementary principal in a PK-5 building in a rural town in Wisconsin. I am married. My wife is a special ed teacher. I have two kids in middle school. They keep me very honest and humble, but are also because we're all in the same district, we're working in the same school for a couple of years, which was really a lot of fun actually. And so seeing it through their eyes, the school district and our work helps me just have that broader perspective. It's not just coming in as a principal, but also as a dad, also as a husband, a colleague. I get to see many points of view, which is pretty unique.
It is unique. I don't know. I think that, I started my career as a middle school teacher and I just love middle school. I'm that rare breed. But then when I lived with middle schoolers, I kind of thought I liked them in mass. But you are right about the way they keep us humble. And it is nice that you have so many perspectives. You have a new course on the site called Literacy Walks, Seek, Name, and Strengthen Promising Practices. I am excited about this edition because it is a treasure chest of ideas for literacy leaders. Will you begin by telling us what you mean by literacy walks?
So literacy walks, it's based on the work around what Reggie Realm has described in her book, Read, Write, Lead. That's through AASCD. And it's focused on what's happening and what's possible. So the current reality, and then thinking about what the potential is here for future learning. It's not about changing teachers, but about attending to what they're currently doing and just understanding their work before we even think about any kind of growth opportunities, I guess. I invite myself into the classrooms to document the strengths and their actions, dialogue, what they're doing, the environment. And it's aligned with what we call promising practices, where they have a lot of evidence behind them. But you know, schools are such dynamic places to say, you know, this is a quote unquote best practice isn't always accurate. So really just trying to confirm and validate the work they're doing, so they feel like, you know, they're making a difference. And through that process for developing trust and clarifying, you know, these priorities that we have in our schools. So my notes are always handwritten. I used to use an iPad with a stylus. I just found that just low technology, other than scanning in my notes before I hand them to them, is beneficial. It just kind of lowers the stakes, I guess. And anytime I leave there, I'm always handing the notes. I'm always publicly acknowledging the work they're doing. So for example, I was in a second grade classroom yesterday, and kids were independently reading, and they're reading books that their classmates had written. They were, you know, they were imaginative narratives about an animal. And so I could inquire about, and where did you find the book? Why did you pick it? And just hearing about their perceptions on those choices that they made and how excited they were to read classmates writing. And the cool part was that these student authored texts were located right in the middle of the classroom library, standing side by side with published, you know, traditionally published authors. And so, you know, how empowering that was to experience and then tell the teacher, you know, what I noticed. So it's very motivating for me to go in, and it's just creates a lot of rapport with the staff, which allows us then to have some bigger conversation.
Yeah, and your term promising practices is just full of hope. So I can imagine, you know, if I know, well, for you, you're going in it into classrooms with that lens of promising practices. And as a teacher, I'm not worried that you're going to cut me down, because I know that you're looking for things that have potential.
Right. I've used to say it was non-evaluative, but as one teacher told me, well, you can't unsee something, right? You know, and they have a point. So what I have said is any of these notes are fair game to put in your evaluation site, you know, your portfolio, your as evidence, and just feel free to put it in there, and teachers have. So I think just kind of reframing it has helped to say this could be used as to support your work.
Yeah, that's a good point. So in the course, you're offering a sequence of steps for leaders to follow. Seek, name, and strengthen. Will you talk more about these steps and why they are important?
Seek is we're being very intentional when we're going in the room. We're not coming in looking for anything, right? We actually have a framework, an instructional framework that we're kind of going off of. Some of the terms are like self-directed learning, authenticity, discussion, right? You know, practices, promising practices that we know will lead to, likely lead to deep student learning. So I'm looking for those things. Once I see them, then I'm describing the experience, like what kids are saying, what kids are doing, what the teacher's doing. And what I try to do in my walks, my handwritten notes, is eventually get to a point where I have enough evidence I can say, when you did this, this is what happened, and this is how it impacted kids' learning. So going back to the previous example, I was noticing kids pulling student-authored texts, and they were reading them during independent learning time. And so my note to the teacher was, when you give kids voice and choice in not only what to read about, what to write about, and you position them as authors, they become authorities for that knowledge and become empowered, you know, learners for hopefully life. And I don't think teachers often see that. They just say, oh, this is just what I do, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what I want to do is then eventually, once I've named it, is to strengthen it and just help them see the bigger perspective. You know, we're our own worst enemies sometimes. And so I want to really want to build them up as professionals. And especially this year when, you know, we as a profession can continue to get beaten down at times and, you know, online or in the media. It's been more important than ever.
So I'd like to talk a little bit about some of your writing. You used to have a blog called Reading by Example. And I think it was last October you wrote your last blog post there and you moved your content to a newsletter as well as a podcast. Yet you kept the name Reading by Example. So I'm just curious, Matt, if you'll kind of tell us more about what Reading by Example means to you and why it's important for all of us.
So I'll go back to when I started blogging in 2012. Our school had, my previous school, we had invested into resources developed by R.E.G. Routman and other colleagues around the reading writing connection and, you know, authentic literacy practices. And one of the tenets of the program is that principals need to know literacy in order to support teachers, and they need to be leaders in that capacity. So, you know, Reading by Example is just kind of embodying, I guess, that identity where I am a reader, I am a writer. And as a principal, I work with principals in my part of the state. We have a monthly network meeting, and not just in my region, but nationwide. I would say principals aren't, too many principals are not identifying themselves with being a literacy person. They'll say, well, I was a math person. And that has to change. I think if we want to see school-wide literacy expand. And so that's my purpose. One of my big purposes for the newsletter is to just break down literacy so that they understand it. And if I can uncover it through my own process and share that, then they might feel more empowered to get into classrooms and do the same work. So a lot of my posts are just experiences from the classroom. For example, I was in a first grade classroom and they were sharing their informational text that they had written on a topic of their choice, and just documented my conversations with the kids and then with the teacher, and learned that her beliefs about writing, which were very positive, seem to have been contagious with the kids as well. And so, yeah, I just guess my hope with writing about it is they can see themselves in that and start to do very similar things, which isn't hard. And in fact, when principals don't, principals come with an open mind and say, well, it's okay, I'm not a literacy expert, I'm just gonna come in and learn. That's probably the best approach, because then the teacher becomes the authority with that principal, and that power dynamic really shifts. So they become the authority in their own, you know, professional learning.
You said, you know, it's not hard. And I think, Matt, that's part of the magic of your writing, is that you really crack open what's happening so that it makes it possible for other people to do the same work that you're doing. And literacy is important. And when we have literacy leaders in schools, you're right that the whole school is growing and really servicing kids in powerful ways. Will you talk about how does offering choice influence readers?
For me, offering choice to a kid implies you are capable of making choices. And I think that begins that kid's journey toward success as a reader for life. Same goes for writing. In my own writing practice, I when I do write, I surface a lot of my own beliefs about this. And by doing that, I feel like then I can talk the talk of readers and writers because I'm doing the same thing.
Yeah, I find that I'm so much more compassionate to kids as readers and writers because I'm reading and writing myself. And you're right, it's important that we put ourselves in those positions. We are just in a year where I feel a lot of us feel like we're doing things for the first time because we are. But you've been an elementary principal for many years, yet this year, I know you've found yourself in many different school situations. You've talked about kids, your school's been virtual and hybrid and in person. I was curious what tried and true practice you've held tightly to this year.
I have come back to my beliefs and values, and I don't know if that's a practice, but I guess stopping myself from going to a place of wanting to be certain about things. And we want certainty right now because it's so uncertain. We tend to kind of double down on what people might say is the best practice or is tried and true. So I've tried to just come back to my beliefs. There's no guarantee, I guess, in education around practices or resources, that they try to convey certainty, like, well, this is research-based. Well, yeah, but has it been shown to, have evidence? Not to say it's not effective, but I feel like if we come back to our beliefs, for example, that reading and writing are reciprocal processes, right? One influences the other and vice versa. Keep coming to back to that helps me stay grounded and helps me make decisions when staff come for like, I want to buy this resource or I want to explore this approach to literacy instruction. Like, all right, let's come back to our beliefs and that's helped me kind of stay kind of true north, through this whole debacle and just especially important now. So that's one practice that has helped me get through this so far.
And it's such a good one, a powerful one to return to our core beliefs, just to be like I like what you said, to be the North Star for all of us. So, Matt, what last bit of advice do you have for offering children more choice and voice as readers?
I would just say expand on what voice and choice might mean in your classrooms, like expand to new areas that you may never have considered. Yeah, we've got to take the test, but this is kind of a year to try things, right? So I was, the article I wrote for this month on growing readers, Luke, I believe, told me that he belonged in the high grade guided reading group. I was subbing for first grade, and another kid like shook their head and like, no, he's not. And I'm like, all right, let's give it a shot. And the text was probably too hard for him, but he adapted. He read with another. We did partner reading instead of on their own, and he was totally just felt very empowered after that. He said, "Oh, this is awesome!" That he could be in the more challenging reading group that day. And that may not have happened had I been stuck with my perception of what where kids belong. So as much voice and choice as we can give to kids, again, in uncertain times, people want certainty, and if we can give them that voice and choice, then they can make decisions and feel empowered. And even if they make mistakes, I mean, what's the worst that's going to happen, right? I don't think it's going to be that big of a deal, and I think the benefits outweigh any cost.
Yeah, it's a great lead essay that you wrote. So if people didn't see it, they're definitely going to want to go back and catch that because it just shows the trust that you put in kids. And like you said, like, what's the worst that's going to happen? So this kid joins a high reading group and And instead, we see the best that could happen in that situation. So, Matt, it's been great talking with you. I'm so glad that you took some time just to talk a little bit more about readers.
Well, thanks, Ruth. It was fun to be here.
At Choice Literacy, we know that you want to be an educator who makes students' lives better through literacy. In order to do that, you need access to comprehensive literacy practices delivered in a way you will actually use. With over 150 in-the-field contributors, we understand the pressure to reach a variety of needs and not enough time to do it, which is why we hold true to workshop tenets like choice and share practical ways to plan and deliver literacy instruction straight to the point of student need. You can find links to all of the articles discussed in the show notes or sign up for the Big Fresh so you can have the links delivered directly to your inbox. Keep growing readers and writers by offering choice in literacy.